I can't turn off. I still like superheroes, and I just have to enjoy it because I still feel like one day it's going to go away. I mean, it will, but I have to enjoy it while it's here. And then it'll go back into the nerd closet, and everybody will think you're a fucking weirdo because you watch something that a bunch of people like.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. Back with me again is my regular co-host, Richard Wally from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, you're semi-regular at this moment, co-host, but supposed to be regular co-host. Yes, and you're Cassidy Robinson from the California area. I want to say Bay Area sometimes.
I'm not anywhere near the Bay Area.
You're not, but you should.
That would be much closer to you, actually. The last time I did the show, I did it with a friend of the show, Keith Foster.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been up to? Have you done anything too exciting?
Well, we did that anniversary thing. That's why I had some of the time off.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did the Oscars.
Well, hold on.
I won.
Hold on. Well, that's exciting, and we'll get back to that. But hold on. How many years have you been married now? Four or five?
It's five or six. I can't remember now.
Wow. I hope she hears this.
She already knows.
If
no,
it's
six.
If it's five, you're supposed to take her on a hot air balloon trip.
That's bullshit.
It's a thing.
Up. No.
It's a real thing that everyone knows and does.
Cassidy, don't make things up. I know you want to live vicariously through my relationship, but that's not something people do.
Look it up. Wikipedia.
I will not.
After the show.
I refuse. And plus, it's too late. That was, again, this was the sixth year.
Oh.
So I was still a year late, even if that is true. So it doesn't matter.
Right. That's just a dinner at Chili's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even Chili's. It has to be like fast food because you're poor. And it's
In and Out Burger.
We don't have those. We're Portland. We have Little Big Burger. Thank you very much.
Some weird granola burger joint.
No, it's real burgers. They're just small. And then they have truffle fries instead of regular fries.
So you won your Oscar pool?
Yeah, I did. I did the whole, I looked at the, I went over the statistics. I went over the Las Vegas. I went and did the guilds.
Yeah.
There's people at our Oscars that always win every year. And I was like, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to look into all of that. And I won. And now I'll never do it again. It takes all the mystery out of it. Why would you do that? It's horrible. Horrible.
I guess.
But it is nice to have, you know, extra money. So that was nice.
Oh, you got money from it. It wasn't just a vanity win.
Yeah. I won like $65 or something like that.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
How many people did you have at your Oscar party?
So like 13, 14.
Yeah.
Well, there was more than that because not everybody put in money for it. So.
Oh, okay. Or maybe somebody decided to spike the punch a little, as it were.
Yeah. Well, I did try to cheat. But they caught me.
How did you cheat?
So what I was going to do is have Jackie copied my ballot to the T. But what I wanted her to do was the ones that she go to the other one that could have won. Like if you're talking about special effects, you do Mad Max and then you do Star Wars. Like, you see what I'm saying?
Right, right, right. So whichever one was the second most likely?
Yeah.
So
that way I could cover all my bases. Of course, there were still two that I would have lost on, but I still won regardless, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I need to be thanked for that. Congratulated for that.
Yes.
And then what else? We went and saw something else happened the next week, and it was fun. There was lots of comic book happenings. We saw David Walker. He's doing Luke Cage and... that other Iron Fist dude in a book. And then we also saw Colin Bunn and Tyler Crook, who are doing this horror book for called Harrow County for Dark Horse. Really good stuff. Then let's see what else. I did everything while I was gone.
Yeah.
I had a vacation from the podcast and I did stuff. I was like, I'm going to live my life. I won't let the podcast hold me down. We went to the Wizard of Oz. We saw a production of the Wizard of Oz.
A stage production?
Yes. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad you lived your life.
I did. And I'm very close to finishing my book. That's another thing.
Ooh, now that's actual news. I don't know if we've ever really talked about this on air, but you're in the midst, you had been in the midst of writing a novel.
I've been fighting it for about a year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wrestling a novel down.
Yeah, it's weird your first time. It's one of the most stressful and one of the best things I've ever done. It's very strange, but I like it, so.
So how close is close?
I would say 5 to 15,000 words. Don't know. I know how I want it to end. I know how I need to get there. I just don't know how many words will...
How many pages that'll actually take.
Yeah. How much it'll take to actually get there.
Right.
But it's coming together right now, like the ending, in a way that I can accept. So I'm happy about that. So
you see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's good. Today on our movie podcast, we're going to be talking about 10 Cloverfield Lane. You're going to review 999 because I wasn't able to see it. And then at the end of the program, we'll review Talladega Nights, which you assigned to me 500 years ago.
Yes, I did that.
Let's go ahead and get into the movie news. And we're going to do something a little bit different. Since we haven't done a show together in a really long time, and me and Keith didn't talk about any news last week because we covered Oscars, we're going to catch up on all the news we've missed, but it's going to be a lightning round. Not too much gibber or jabber or droning.
I don't believe this, but go on.
We're going to try and run through it. A little commentary.
We do have a, as I call it, our safe word, lightning round.
Just
if that's declared, we're going to be moving on quick. You can finish your sentence, but it's like, but no, you know, like Donald Trump in it. You don't just keep talking about what you want to talk about.
Yeah. You can't filibuster the lightning round. So we'll start here. This is really old news. Jonah Hill is confirmed to star in a remake of Mrs. Doubtfire. What do you think? Yay or nay?
I like Jonah Hill. Well, I don't know. It's Mrs. Doubtfire. Come on. That's an old goodie, but it's not that old.
Or that good. It's
fun.
It's fun.
I mean, I have a nostalgia, you're right.
I can't think of that director's name right now. Chris Columbus comedies from the mid-90s goes, it's probably one of the better ones, but that's not saying a ton. Also, I don't think I could ever believe Jonah Hill as being a father, but maybe they'll change that part. Lightning round!
Lightning round! okay, so Will Smith and David Ayer are going to re-team for Bright with Joel Edgerton. So David Ayer, he can be like big action flamboyant dude. Will Smith, he likes to act in things. And Joel Edgerton also likes to act in things. Joel Edgerton can be really interesting, and so can Will Smith. It really depends on their material and who they're working with.
Most of the time.
And with this specifically, the only other side news with this is I know that Netflix is actually probably acquiring it. So that's kind of interesting because it will be I think it's going to be released in theaters as well.
Mm-hmm.
And not streamed.
Right.
So that's kind of, I don't know. I think that's kind of neat.
Well, that's kind of what they did with Beasts of No Nation. They had a small theater run and then they took it out. So that they could qualify for awards.
Well, I think this is going to be like a bigger release. And I don't think that they're going to go straight to streaming so quickly. Also, Max Landis is writing this.
He's co-writing it with Ayer.
And I think they're actually a good pair. I think that, because I complained about, I want to say American Hustle, but it's not.
What was that movie called? American
Jesse Eisenberg.
Psycho. No, yeah. I don't have my IMDb open either. But that yeah. movie, the one with Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen
Stewart. Lightning Round, no IMDb.
I know.
But yeah, I think that they would make a good pair, because my problem with that Kristen Ehr, Jesse Eisenberg American movie is that I feel like Max Landis needed a better director on that to make it really pop and work. And so I think Ehr can really do action. So I actually think this all sounds kind of interesting and fun and could be pretty good. It has a good pedigree, at least.
Right. Interesting pedigree. I don't know about great. We'll see.
Lightning round. Okay. I got to tell my funny anecdote about the next Joseph Gordon-Levitt
I'll roll these two together. So,
yeah.
They announced that the Final Destination 5 writer, so, you know, really big name there, is going to be doing the screenplay for the Sandman movie, Neil Gaiman comic book from the 90s. And then they also announced almost a day after that that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was originally going to produce and star in the movie, has left the project. So what's your anecdote?
So when this popped up, specifically the Joseph Gordon-Levitt is quitting thing, specifically the headline that it read, and I, like, you know when you just are reading headlines and you just take them at face value and mm-hmm. you're not thinking about it? It said Joseph Gordon-Levitt quits and joins the KKK.
Why? What?
Yeah, that's what it said. It's a KKK project. I think it's called like K Unit or something like that. But I was like, wow, he's making some very strange and big life choices. Like, I took it absolutely serious at first. So for me, I still am pretending that Joseph Gordon-Levitt has joined the KKK. My opinions on the Sandman thing, it's sad because Sandman's kind of heady and needs somebody smart enough to bring it to the screen. And, you know, I had my doubts about Joseph Gordon-Levitt being able to do that. So the fact that you bring in Final Destination 5, that makes it a little iffy.
No, yeah. I feel you on that point. However, we should remember that the writer of Source Code, wrote like Species 3 before that.
That's a great movie, man. What are you talking about?
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's not
Species
always a rule.
Species 3 is amazing.
Oh, well, I haven't followed the entire Species franchise, but
I don't know.
Dropped off after the first one. as far as Joseph Gordon-Levitt goes, I always thought that was a little bit of miscasting. I think we should have somebody less boyish, a little bit more ethereal, a little bit more Cumberbatch, but not him because he's overused. Lightning round. J.K. Simmons is going to star as Commissioner Gordon in the Justice League movie. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know what all that means still. And also, I don't think either of us are super excited. Oh. You know, I could see him doing a good Jim Gordon. I just don't know. Again, I have no idea what it's going to look like and if I'm going to enjoy this DC universe. Star Wars.
We'll have bigger opinions about the whole thing after we see BV Superman.
Lightning round. Star Wars Han Solo movie features Chewbacca's origin story. My brain doesn't work this way. I don't read it and think, oh, they're going to like develop how him and Han Solo. The first thing I think is like, oh, they're going to show
It's going to be the Star Wars Christmas special all over again with just Wookiees having conversations. I would think that would actually be amazing if the entire movie, or not the entire movie, but like the first half of it, like a 40-minute sequence, was like the opening of 2001 where there's like no dialogue. It's just like Wookiees growling at each other.
See, I was thinking more like something like a Jim Jarmusch, like the 100 cigarettes or whatever, in like black and white. And like there would be like subtitles for all the Wookiees. But that was just my interpretation. And they'd all be smoking and in like coffee joints.
And talking about existentialism or whatever.
Yeah.
What do I really think? Who cares? We're too caught up in origin stories. But I guess if they need to dig up something to make this whole cinematic universe works. I don't really need a Chewbacca origin story.
No, it doesn't need to be an origin story. It needs to be just a fucking straight up heist kind of space thriller, space gangster movie.
Right.
That's all I want. Don't give me any of that dumb Jedi stuff.
Right.
I just want some space gangsters. Lightning round. Beetlejuice 2. Not happening, says Tim Burton rep. Probably. Tim Burton seems like he's like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I don't know what he's going to do with his life. He might be having a small breakdown.
Well, he has the much anticipated sequel to Alice in Wonderland coming out later this year. I think actually not even very far from now.
Well, the trailer for Peregrine's something children, House for Wayward Children or something like that just came out. And apparently he's doing that. He's also involved in a Dumbo live adaptation.
Mm-hmm. He's like caught in the mouse house now.
Yeah, I don't know. Which, maybe he's just doing some cocaine and enjoying single life.
Oh, yeah. I forgot him and Hell in the Bottom Corner broke up. I don't really care. I didn't really need a Beetlejuice 2. And, you know, yeah, Beetlejuice has a big mythology and it has a lot of, like, cool production design and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a good movie and it was kind of a classic for its time. I think it's sort of a lightning strike sort of movie. I don't think you can make
that. Yeah, it's a lightning in a bottle completely. And it's also, I think, of an era.
Yeah. Because a lot of it is like a critique of sort of yuppie capitalism, 80s Reagan era stuff. I don't know if you can really, there's much to say about that now.
Oh, I think you could, but you'd have to go there. And if they're not going to go there, I don't want to see it.
I don't think so. I think
also, I don't want to see, like, speaking of Alice in Wonderland, I don't want to see that kind of Beetleverse universe. I need something more grounded and weird.
Yeah, I don't want a bunch of CGI and then a bunch of callbacks to the first movie. Lightning round. Disney announces a fifth Indiana Jones movie with Harrison Ford. We talked about a little bit before we started recording. I was like, didn't this already get announced like forever ago? And then you reminded me that no, it was just a bunch of fans were hoping that Chris Pratt would do it. And he said he doesn't want to. So there's this.
Well, but then the news picked it up for some reason too. That happens all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so yeah, Indiana Jones is happening. We know that that Disney bought Lucasfilms. And yeah, they're going to put out Indiana Jones. That's just obvious. But am I excited? Not really.
Well, it's not like the last one gave us a lot to be excited for. However, maybe they'll learn their lessons from it and, you know, do something cool. I mean, Spielberg was just nominated for a Best Picture.
Oh, with Bridge of Spies? Is that what you're talking about? Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. But I mean, he's been nominated several times. I don't know. I'm not...
Yeah,
Indiana Jones already exists.
Yeah, we have three really good movies and one we'd rather not talk about. I don't know why they're going to try and do it again, except for I do know why they want more money. Yeah. I always said if they're going to do this, they should do young Indiana Jones and find somebody younger. And if they were to do that, they might as well get one of the guys they're talking about to do young Han Solo.
I think they should do it in space.
And then have the two characters meet and it gets super meta?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a time-traveling Indiana Jones film where young Indiana Jones is greeted by an older Indiana Jones that's coming back from a thing to get a special god chalice from Mars.
Right. And then at the end, they go through a wormhole and end up meeting Steven Spielberg and he explains how they're just figments of his imagination.
And then they have to fight Stephen Hawking. Yeah.
Okay. I'll watch that movie.
Yeah.
Let's just go full on Pirates of the Caribbean 3 with it. And that's the movie news.
That was the lightning round. I think we should always do the news like that personally.
Probably. People would probably enjoy it more. We'll go ahead and get into our reviews. And I'll let you do your solo review for 999, a movie I did not see.
Yeah, 999 is the next movie that John Hillcoat has put out. John Hillcoat, of note, because he did The Proposition, he did Lawless, and The Road. He's a director that I've actually liked. He's younger. He's out of Australia. He does these kind of like more, I guess, like philosophical kind of thinking man kind of, but like manly movies.
Right.
He's like, and so I was excited for to see him do something in a modern era. Specifically with 999, that's where he was getting into. Also, the trailer made it look insane.
Yeah, the Red Band trailer especially.
Yeah. Now, it has about everybody. It has so many wonderful actors in it. And charismatic actors on top of that, and people who even, you know, and there's a lot of actors in this, even when they're in bad things, they're still good. Now this movie, scenes were really good. Like there were certain scenes that were just very impactful and very, very interesting. There's a lot of plot lines. I don't think you would have liked that. I think you would have been not okay with that, because there's a lot of plot lines wrapping up into each other, because there's heists and there's Russian mafia stuff happening, and there's good cops, bad cops, all sorts of things, and criminals. I actually think that they tie all that stuff together pretty well. But all in all, the movie is kind of lackluster. It kind of gets into, I mean, it's kind of like a poor man's Heat, if I'm going to be honest. But it does, but there's no individual thing that's necessarily that bad about it. It just doesn't really have any oomph. I mean, you've got great performances. Like, I really did enjoy Chitwell Ejiofor in this. Like, I mean, you usually do. You just enjoy him. But he played, he got to kind of get out of, he usually plays very polite people, no matter what he's in. I mean, even if you're talking about Serenity, which was the first thing I saw him in, you know, he was this polite assassin for the government. But he was very polite and kind of well-spoken, well-dressed, this very nice etiquette. In this, you get to see him be a little bit, he's an like ex-soldier. And you get to see him be a little bit more, a little bit rougher around the edges and not be like a prim and proper kind of character. So you get to see him play against type, which is nice.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a scary dude in this. In fact, all of them are pretty much scary dude, every single character in this.
Yeah. And we also have Casey Affleck, Anthony Mackie, Woody Harrelson, Aaron Paul, Kate Winslet, Gal Gadot, who's going to be in BB Superman as the new Wonder Woman, Norman Reedus, Teresa Palmer. I mean, really everyone.
Clifton Collins Jr. plays into that in a big way too. So, I mean, talking about all these people, it is a good cast. Lots of young, kind of more exciting talent.
Are a lot of people wasted? I feel like in a big ensemble like this with multiple plot threads, that a lot of these people could just be cameos essentially.
No, you kind of do. See, that's what's kind of weird about it. When, as I was talking about this, and I was like, man, you know what? They don't really necessarily leave plot lines off. It's just, it's something on how it's put together, like literally how it's edited. Just,
okay.
It doesn't have an intensity to it. There's just not a spice to it that really kind of like draws you in. Of all these people that you mentioned, all of them do a great job. Woody Harrelson plays this crazy kind of good cop, but very much a drug addict character. He does really good. Anthony Mackie is really great, and he plays this like bad cop that's kind of a good cop because he's like conflicted about what he's doing. Casey Affleck plays like a good cop, but he's like this like veteran, and that's something that's very interesting about this too, is they do talk about how like a lot of these policemen and a lot of these bank robbers are ex-military. And it kind of shows about how crime and the police work are becoming more and more militarized. And that's kind of the interesting part of it.
Yeah.
I was getting to the fact that Kate Winslet was not good.
Ooh.
Did this funny. She was a Russian Jew in this.
Okay.
And she was not. And so she did a little bit of an accent, but it wasn't convincing. Every time she was on, I was taken out. It took me, I mean, it wasn't until like the last of the movie that I was like, okay, she's in this and she's being weird.
And she's usually good at accents too. I usually don't have a problem with her doing like, you know, like she was super good in Steve Jobs, and she was doing a German or something in that movie the whole time.
Some kind of dialect thing. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about it, is all the acting was good. It comes down to I really do think it comes down to how it was put together, because the storyline, everything about it, there's something interesting to be said. There's, I think there's even a little bit of subtext. Like I said, there's this like kind of weird, like militarization of the police thing going on.
Yeah.
And also the like, who's good, who's bad. Like, but I mean, but again, it just kind of comes off as a poor man's Heat. It never kind of gets its footing. And, Aaron Paul plays a bad drug addict again. That's essentially, I don't think there's really that much more to say about it. I think that's why it's kind of gone under the radar, because it didn't really have a lot going for it. If the movie would have been messy, but delivered on the energy of the trailer, I could have forgiven it, but it doesn't have that. It's kind of lackluster and doesn't have a lot going for it. So.
Yeah. Well, John Hillcoat, I mean, I can't say for certain because I haven't seen the movie, but John Hillcoat is not an energy guy. Like,
no, he's not.
You know, if you throw in somebody like an Oliver Stone or something like that, then maybe that's what you would get. But John Hillcoat is more of a deliberate kind of director. And I feel like lately he's been given material that doesn't, or scripts that don't really match what he does energy wise.
Right.
So, like, Lawless was okay, but I'm kind of okay with never seeing it again. This movie I was really excited about because, like you said, that trailer looked so intense and crazy. But then now that you're saying it, I'm like, yeah, that, I don't know why that they would sell a John Hilco movie like that. But,
well, I mean, it's kind of how it's sold, but it's also just kind of like, I mean, the movie, what it's about and how it's the thriller aspect of it kind of does actually need to be brought that intensity. Actually, I watched some interviews from him, and he was actually talking about how he was up for Drive and The Revenant.
Oh, and I would have liked to seen his Revenant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even after Archer's version, I would like to see John Hillcoat's version more. So, like I said, it's kind of a miss. It's not like a miss where you go like, oh my gosh, that's so horrible.
Did it catch it on Netflix kind of movie?
I mean, if you're a fan of John Hillcoat and you're...
you just like crime cinema in general?
Yeah, and if you like crime cinema in general, I think it can play to that crowd. But again, if we're talking like day-to-day and you want just... Or you haven't seen like a more modernized kind of bank robber movie, just go watch Heat.
Okay.
But again, if you like the director, it's more of a niche. If you fit into that niche, then check it out eventually on Netflix.
Cool. Well, let's go ahead and get into our joint review of 10 Cloverfield Lane, a movie I didn't know very much about going into it deliberately because it's a Bad Robot production who did the first, well, who did Cloverfield.
And, I like how you had to correct yourself.
Right, right. Well, they did.
I mean, there's a reason why you had to, because I understand why you set it up that way.
Oh, we'll get into it, but. They did Cloverfield back in whatever that was, 2008, 2009, and they did Super 8 and, you know, when they've done like the Mission Impossible movies and the Star Trek movies, but they've been working on this model of J.J. Abrams' mystery box. Mm-hmm. And the mystery box works in a lot of different ways, you know, specifically in Lost, every episode kind of ends on a cliffhanger, and for every question it raises, or for every question it answers, it raises three more, like that kind of storytelling. And I think there's a lot of that in 10 Cloverfield Lane. This is not directed by Abrams, although it is produced. This one is directed by Dan Trachtenberg, and it was written by Josh Campbell, Matthew Stukin. It's kind of a team of writers here. Damien Chazelle, which didn't he do? Yeah, he did Whiplash.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if he just did a punch-up on this or something, or like how involved he was with the writing process.
Well, once we get into the review a little bit more, we can talk, because I kind of looked into it a little bit.
Okay, so plot-wise, this is a really contained story in a lot of ways. It's both contained in a very small one-location kind of thing, and it's also contained in that it doesn't really have a lot of tentacles out there, pun maybe intended, especially connected all that much to Cloverfield. The basic story here is Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays this woman named Michelle who's just broken up with her boyfriend. She's racing out of town to get away from her problems, trying to avoid the phone calls from her ex. And in the middle of the night, she gets ran off the road by another vehicle. And when she awakes, she finds herself in a compound in the middle of nowhere, locked to her bed. And she finds that John Goodman is a survivalist guy named Howard, who's told her that if she leaves the compound, she's going to be immediately poisoned by nuclear fallout. And throughout the movie, there's another character that we meet in there as well named Emmett, played by John Gallagher Jr. And it's sort of a three-hander as far as the cast goes. And throughout the movie, we're led to question whether or not they're being held captive against their will, or there really is something bad going on outside. And I think that the writers and the director really like keeping those balls in the air without ever giving you a full picture of it is definitely one or the other until maybe the third act. But what did you think of 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Depends what part. I mean, this is one of those movies that, I don't think benefited from having more writers come in, and I don't think it benefited from having another concept tagged on to it.
Mm-hmm.
I
have so many theories about why this movie happened the way it did.
Well, okay, so this was a movie that was already written and pretty much done. Like, I mean, not even just like, but actually like shot and then picked up later by Bad Robot Productions.
Okay.
And so your base story that you're talking about with the kind of like, is he a crazy maniac or is he just saving me kind of story that Michelle goes through with Howard. It's pretty good. I feel like a broken record here, but I feel like that they could have ratcheted up the tension. They kind of break it with some humor here and there, which is nice. But at the same time, I think that there was I felt like it was they tried to overbalance it. And so you just kind of get like a muddy blah instead of getting like, you know, a little bit of you get more humor or you get a little bit more tension. I think this movie would have benefited from more tension. Okay. That being said, I think Michelle, I think that Mary Elizabeth Winstead does a good job. And I think that she brings some gravitas to like, oh shit, I'm being held by this guy. John Goodman does too, because you kind of question whether he's just a very simple person or if he is kind of like a very controlling crazy man. Right. And then there's enough
evidence for either.
Right. And even as things progress and you learn more, I don't think it again, like you said, it's a J.J. Abrams kind of, or Bad Robot, I should say, kind of production. And I don't feel like they really get answered. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for this movie either. No. There's also John Gallagher Jr., who he's funny. He's a good wisecracker.
He's a good foil to Goodman and Elizabeth Winstead. And he kind of is that balancing block that you're talking about. And actually, if it had just been a two-hander, it might have been a slightly more tense movie.
Right.
But I think that John Gallagher Jr. does add something as a character, especially for key sequences.
I agree. I feel like I understand like the story, how it was told and like how it was like why they went a certain direction with things.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess just my overall effect. Now, if we're talking about we're going to have to go into spoiler zone. It's a Bad Robot movie. So, I mean,
yeah, I figured that there'd be no way to properly review this unless we did spoiler zone. Okay, hold on one second. I want to say a few things before we get to spoiler zone, just about the first two thirds of the movie.
Sure.
I think that little story works really well. And I think that it's really well played and it's really well directed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, using the small set and the minimal locations and that kind of stuff, it still feels cinematic. There's a lot of tension, a lot of atmosphere going on. And, you know, I think when I first saw John Goodman doing this character, which is very much a character, it's not John Goodman as we normally see him, although maybe somewhat similar to his character in Barton Fink, but even still kind of different from that. I was very aware that he was playing a character, and I was very aware that he was doing a lot of, like, choosing a lot of acting choices.
Okay.
And I was a little worried that, like, he was going to come off as hammy and a little actory. But as the movie went on and I learned more about him and you learn more about the situation, I bought into his character and I stopped seeing him as an actor playing a character. I started seeing the character. However, I do think that had they just had a slightly lesser known character actor, like, who was the guy who was in Drew Carey and Fargo? John Lynch. I think somebody like him would have maybe sold the part with a little bit more mystery. Than having somebody as well recognized as John Goodman. However, he does do a good job. I think
Goodman's just kind of a big enough name that he brings some bias with him.
You needed him to sell the movie, honestly.
Well, that too. I was saying more as a character. I mean, I know what you're talking about with the actor thing, but at the same time, like sometimes I just accept that and say, oh, the character's just eccentric. Because sometimes you meet people who are just weird like that.
Right.
who also in their lives choose a lot of interesting choices.
Right.
So.
And Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think, is acting her balls off in this movie, as she normally does. Even when she's in bad movies, and she's in a lot of bad movies. This isn't one of them. I think this is actually a pretty good movie. minus some things I'm sure we'll get into. But she's always bringing her A game, because she has not gotten that Brie Larson touch of Hollywood gold yet. But she's working really hard for it. And I think she'll get it eventually. I really do. I enjoyed most of the movie as this kind of Twilight Zone episode writ long.
Right.
Is more or less how I felt about it. And kind of that's how I sort of what the first Cloverfield is too, just on a much larger, you know, blockbuster scale.
No, I think that's a really good way to summarize it personally.
Yeah. So now, spoiler zone. How do we feel about this third act? Because to me, it was like,
well, this is how my
Danny Boyle level of misguided third act.
Well, see, this is kind of how, hey, you leave him alone. I still like Sunshine. Gosh, damn it. I know what you're talking about. Don't pretend I don't. Okay.
Right.
I still think that even in, if we're comparing those two, and they're apples and apples. We're talking green apples and red apples, but that's okay.
Right.
If you compare those, I still think that he blends it better. Mm-hmm. The problem in why I would probably have a very similar perception as you did about that first part of the movie, mm-hmm. if they didn't have this ending. Now, I'm not one of those. I wasn't going to try to separate them, even though I know that it was literally tagged on to the ending.
And
the end. Sorry.
Boy, you can tell.
Yeah, you can really tell.
I mean, we're in spoiler zone, so we might as well just say it. Turns out there really was aliens, and that is its barely connection to the first Cloverfield, because it's still not even really a sequel. This is almost like Halloween 3 Season of the Witch level of tricking the audience into seeing a movie based on a known property.
Right.
But like Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, I think it stands on its own in its own interesting way, but I could see a lot of people being very annoyed with how the movie turns out, going in expecting more Cloverfield.
And to be honest, that didn't annoy me per se.
No,
like even in the very first of it, I felt like you caught a glimpse through a window of something that could have been. And I know that they kind of pepper those in for fanboys like me, I guess, but
and just to make so that the ending wouldn't have been so completely
right
out of nowhere. It's still pretty, I mean, it's not even necessarily that the plot stuff is out of nowhere. It's that it's tonally just takes a hard left.
Well, this is my problem. So what I was saying was that I can't take the movie as, even though it is like literally tagged on together, like I have to look at it as the finished product and say, well, how could have you had taken this and made it like a more cohesive thing?
Right.
I think personally there's a scene like, I don't know, like it's close to the halfway mark where you're kind of shown that something bad is happening outside of the bunker, like that John Goodman's character isn't completely crazy and kind of gives you a kind of a breath. I think they don't show you what exactly going on. They just kind of show you the repercussions. I think that they should have just shown it to you because the mystery, it doesn't, that kind of revelation didn't do anything for the movie other than you go, oh, this is very tagged on. That's all it does. So right. If you had some of that kind of like, oh, there's some really bad stuff. I mean, so I still think that you can see that monster and then she can go, oh, I'm still trapped in this basement with this other kind of monster. I would rather face that than face him down here. You can do that and that's okay. And I think that that could have worked out. And I think if you would have blended it better, mm-hmm. I think that the movie could have worked better. However, it's not that. What you're seeing is just this, she breaks out of the basement and there's all of a sudden there's monsters there. And you're like, oh, okay, cool.
And the movie turns into an entirely different movie.
What the hell is this pill bug?
For about the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And what I think's even more of a problem for that is whatever kind of like subtext or whatever it's trying to say about its characters or its revelation, because it's kind of like, it's a little bit like a Allegory of the Cave type of story where, you know, it's a where they're held like
the
in
Plato
there.
One?
Yeah, Plato's okay. Allegory of the Cave, this idea of these people who are being trapped, believing that if they leave, they'll be attacked by creatures, and then they realize that they're shadow puppets, and it's a story about enlightenment. Except for that all gets erased once the giant UFO like starts chasing around the cornfield. And so then it ends up being a kind of fun and pulpy Twilight Zone episode, but it's not about a damn thing.
Well, that's why we already know that the monsters in Cloverfield exist, too. And you're selling it on this premise. So that's another reason why the whole time I was like, OK, why didn't you just do that?
You know what, though? Even though I knew that I kind of knew in the back of my head that it was only tangentially related to the first film.
Oh, I did, too. Yeah.
And I knew that it was going to kind of be its own creature. And I was kind of excited about that and the possibilities of what they're sort of doing with this thing. I would have actually been okay with it being called 10 Cloverfield Lane and there being no aliens. And it had just been this thriller. And basically Cloverfield as a property would just be like its outer limits or well, its.
Well, it's happening in the background still. Like it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Even if it didn't have to do that. I mean, even if it didn't have to connect that explicitly, if it had just been like. And this episode of Cloverfield is about this story. And it kind of is that, but it's, I don't know. I just feel like the ending is trying way too hard to connect the two and does so pretty clunkily.
Yeah. And it kind of loses its, for me, it kind of lost its merits. I'm one of those people that if you have a pretty good movie, like 75% of a good movie, and then you tack on a really bad ending, I'm going to go fuck you. Like that's just my gut reaction. You know, like a movie that I kind of did a similar thing to me is Wolverine. You have this very grounded thing of this dude running around Japan, stabbing other dudes. And then all of a sudden there's a giant space robot thing. What I'm saying, though, is for some reason, I can't get over that. I don't think it's necessarily like everybody has to feel that way. But me personally, I don't like it when endings do that. That being said, this one, it kind of spoiled the movie, but at the same time, it didn't ruin the movie. I do think it's decent. But it just didn't feel like it committed. That's why I'm saying you either commit to the monsters, you commit to the thriller. You get one or the other.
Right.
And so
or write the story so that it makes sense. I mean, yeah.
I think it still makes sense because there are monsters out there, it just shifts tonally. I mean, it's not about, it's more about believability for a narrative, and it's less about,
It does some problematic things in a few different ways. One, the biggest one is that this huge tonal shift that happens, and that's just jarring.
Mm-hmm.
But then on top of it, it really, like I said, it kind of negates a lot of the subtext of the movie, because you have this character played by John Goodman, who's essentially like this Alex Jones InfoWars crazy man.
Sure.
And there's a lot of, like, what are we trying to say about people like this who, you know, build bunkers and who stow away weapons and that kind of stuff. And, like, what, you know... There is something to be said about politically about that, especially in Oregon recently and all that kind of stuff.
Well, also with there's a perfect scene. There's also kind of some male-female dynamics.
Yeah,
there's
actually,
a perfect scene when they're playing this board game.
Mm-hmm.
And he and John Goodman during the thing is trying to come up with this word. And the other person is using the female Michelle as an example. And he'll say little girl, he'll say princess, he'll say all these things, but he won't say woman.
That was a really, that whole sequence in general.
That was a perfect scene.
A perfect scene, yeah. That was really good. And there's a lot of great little, like, almost like stage performance moments in that, in the movie, because it is so intimate and small scale. But
yeah.
I enjoyed the movie. I liked it until I stopped liking it. But I liked it enough that I still recommend it. But it is problematic.
That's a good way to say it. It is problematic and it is hard to kind of, I didn't like go, well, screw this movie when it happened, really.
Yeah.
Like that's usually my reaction to these endings, but this one I didn't really, but at the same time I felt it was more like I was a dad of like a teenager that just wrecked the car. I was like, really? You know, you shouldn't have been doing this. Like, I mean, it's not exactly like that.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about this. And so it didn't ruin it, but at the same time, I still feel like it could have been blended and it still work if they just would have committed to one concept or the other.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the Netflix homework, which you assigned me week before last.
I think it was like 3 weeks ago.
It might have been. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, an old Will Ferrell, Adam McKay joint from 2006. Go ahead and tell me what's going on in that.
So this came just right out after, this was their film following up Anchorman. Anchorman was a kind of big sleeper hit and it did pretty well for them. I feel like this is a strange movie. I didn't want to see it because it was about NASCAR.
Right.
And I was like, it's just going to be about NASCAR. They're going to make a bunch of dumb jokes.
Right.
That's not really what it is. I mean, it is what it is, but it isn't what it is.
Okay.
They also have this weird subtextual thing about America going on, like how the corporatization. And the funny thing is I really enjoyed this movie for the first 30 minutes. Really, really enjoyed it. I think it has some really fun jokes. I really like for some reason, the Ricky Bobby character, this kind of jackassy, arrogant NASCAR driver.
As is a lot of Will Ferrell characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He there's this joke that they keep doing that really, really pays off for me is the baby Jesus ones.
Yeah,
where he refuses, he goes, "Well, that's my Jesus."
where he only prays think of him. to the nativity story Jesus.
Yeah. And it does have that kind of quality of a Adam McKay comedy where you get kind of that abstract humor.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also kind of, it is trying to be a sports story. And it is also trying to be a like political kind of allegory, if you could call it that. It's maybe stretching it a little bit, but what I'm saying is this is another example of not committing. If you're going to do one of them, you got to blend all those elements. I think that the first 30 minutes really works and I get the concept and I'm like, yeah, I can get behind this. But then I think the kids are kind of obnoxious. He has these kids with this horrible sports wife.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be funny because they're like foul-mouthed and horrible, but they're just kind of obnoxious to me. I think Bill Riley does a really good job in this. Sacha Baron Cohen.
You mean John C. Riley?
Who did I say?
Bill.
Bill? Like, is there a Bill
C. Riley? Yeah, like Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, gosh. Well, that would be fun. Well, I mean, it's not completely off. I mean, if we're talking about the character.
John C. Riley plays his accomplice and like his dopey best friend who's always looking for his day to shine. And
right.
Yeah. John C. Reilly is really good in everything. Like John C. Reilly is like, he's like a real actor.
Well, but he also, he brings a comedic presence. It's
no,
not just
when
like,
he commits to a comedy, he goes for it. Kind of like when, Jeff Daniels, when he was in Dumb and Dumber, we never seen him do that before.
Mm-hmm.
He'd always kind of played in kind of more higher brow movies. And then all of a sudden he's in a really goofy Jim Carrey comedy and totally commits to being, you know, just as goofy. And it, you know, was, at the time was kind of surprising and refreshing. And John C. Reilly is really good at doing either.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I do think that this movie has its merits and I can see why it kind of has like almost like a cult following,
mm-hmm.
but I think it kind of falls apart because it does feel like three different things kind of happening. The sports movie, honestly, the sports movie kind of quality is, I think, what drags it down the most because it's just about, you know, a down and out driver.
That it has to follow. Yeah. Has to follow a certain trajectory. Like, yeah, this sort of redemption story.
And I think if they would have either had it gone crazier and I don't know how, like, I don't know, make it about. They go to war with France because of it or something crazy and they drive tanks over each other. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that element, because you've seen that story so many times, it makes it kind of just kind of like shrug. I'm not a huge fan of that story, of the sports story. So for me, that's what kind of did it in for me. However, that being said, I did laugh quite a bit, and I did enjoy the performances. I mean, yes, Will Ferrell does a lot of jackassy, arrogant dudes, but at the same time, he's really, really good at it. So, again, my biggest complaint is that it just does another sports. It does not another sports comedy, but does a sports movie.
Right. I was not that into this movie, to be completely honest, on most levels. I didn't think it was that funny. I saw where the jokes were, and I thought that they always, like, especially for, you know, Adam McKay, like, you know, he's not always 100%, but usually I can, even his lesser movies, I can, like, kind of, like, laugh at and be like, oh, yeah, well, at least I had a good time. I wasn't, like, annoyed or upset with it. This movie got closer to that. Like, I thought, like, none of the characters were redeemable enough to even be likable or to even, like, be jackassy enough to like, go to that, like, that level of absurdity that would make it funny, with the exception of the actors who played Ricky Bobby's parents. The one guy who was in Office Space, whose name I don't have in front of me right now, who plays his dad, Gary Cole, and Jane Lynch plays his mother. I thought they were kind of funny because there was a little bit more subtlety in their stuff. Sacha Baron Cohen, who plays this ridiculously over French Frenchman.
He plays a Sacha Baron Cohen character.
Yeah, but I felt like he brings what he does to things. Like he goes 100% into it. But I feel like there's something about it that's just like, maybe it's the writing, you know, that doesn't have the spontaneity of a Sacha Baron Cohen.
See, I felt like you could really, what I thought you were saying earlier, and I was like, yeah, that's true about this, is you were saying you could see the jokes. Is like, yeah, you could definitely see where they were plugging it in or they were improvising, and then they would edit it in. You could feel the edits. And so for me, that kind of took it away from the movie.
I mean, there are moments where when it does that, like, Anchorman level absurdity and it becomes funny because it transcends the story because the story is just not that interesting.
Right.
But like the stuff with the cougar in the car, I thought that was funny.
That was funny
because it's ridiculous. Anything with the parents, I thought was pretty funny. Sacha Baron Cohen, I didn't think was funny at all in this movie. I thought he was actually, I don't know. I just wish he'd like given that character another pass. Like he had come up with that and somebody had been like, why don't you try something different? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, something about his accent or something about the way he decided to go about it. He commits to his choices. I just don't think they're very interesting choices. John C. Reilly's really believable and really good, but he has nothing to do ultimately. I don't know. I thought this was like mid-level Adam Sandler.
I wouldn't go that far. It's definitely not his best or my favorite of his. I would rank it probably under the other guys as well. Mm-hmm. But I still enjoyed it and I could see what he was trying to do with it. He didn't develop that part. The part that was kind of, I think that there is a bit of a satire because yes, it is kind of tapping into the like, oh, this is NASCAR. But at the same time, it's kind of pointing a finger and satirizing it. And right. It's also kind of making fun of like corporatization and selling and giving your soul to these, you know, these marketing things.
Right. And at the end, it's almost explicitly laid out when the yuppie, annoying straw man of a bad guy sports manager is like kissing up to Halliburton and all of these big corporate guys.
But at the same time, watching this makes something like The Big Short make sense to me. I'm like, oh, he really wanted to do that eventually. Right. He just didn't maybe know it at this time even.
Yeah. So. Adam McKay is a political guy at his heart. And I think The Big Short in a big way was kind of the movie he'd been working up to his entire career. And he comes from a satirical background. You don't necessarily see that in stuff like The Other Guys or Anchorman, which is just playing with tropes more or less. Mm-hmm. But this is also the same guy who did, what was that one? The election movie? Was it just The Election? The Other Guy, Eastbound and Down, Step Brother. No, maybe he didn't do that one. I take it back.
You're talking about the one with
Zach Galifianakis
and Will Ferrell. Well, that's an easy mistake to make.
Right.
It feels, I think it's part of, it's definitely, it was developed by his, I think he was a producer on it, and I think it was developed through his company. Okay. But I don't think that it was, he didn't direct it.
I mean, so there's stuff in there that I think would lead you to believe that there's a satire to be made. There's a ton of product placement all over the movie. It's slapped all over the movie, just like it's slapped on their cars and jackets. Mm-hmm. You know, not just during racing scenes, but all throughout. And it, almost in sort of a Josie and the Pussycats kind of way, like, we'll bring so much attention to it that we'll make that part of the joke.
Well, for me,
there's a part of me that's like, well, it's just not funny enough, really, to justify that. So it still feels kind of gross.
See, to me, I mean, I think you're right. I think in the long run, you're right. But it, to me, it's like a SNL skit that went on too long. Because, yes. Like I said, I think that the first 30 minutes are funny and are pretty, like, good and dynamic. And then you get into the actual plot line and you go, okay, whatever. And so, for the most part, I just don't think that, it came together. That being said, I think I can understand why there is kind of a crowd for it. And it will never be one of my favorite of Adam McKay's. If I go back to his, I'm probably going to go back to Step Brothers. Or if I want more serious Adam McKay, I would do The Big Short again. But I think it shows qualities of what he can do and qualities of where he can kind of go wrong as well. And also kind of his style of filmmaking, because he's a very big ad-libber. And I think ad-lib can give you an energy in your films and kind of an interesting poppy quality to the dialogue and to the action and everything. But at the same time, it can also make it feel really desperate, not desperate, but disparate, I think is the word, and kind of disconjointed. So, and that's kind of how I feel about this film. And it just, when it becomes a sports movie, I'm uninterested.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just reviewed Eddie the Eagle last week. And Eddie the Eagle is like the blueprint of sports movie 101. It is every underdog sports movie you've ever seen. But we both really enjoyed it because it is 100% sincere and really loves its characters and it has kind of this kind of warm sensibility about it that sort of invites you in. I don't know, like the combination of the snarkiness of this movie and then it not being that funny about being snarky, and then on top of it leaning on the sports movie tradition, like to me the whole thing was pretty tepid and lazy.
I think that's where I came out with it. But again, for me, that first 30 minutes was good. And the other thing is what it did help me is understand, like, this movie has been quoted at me so many times. And I was like, oh, that's where that's from. Oh, that's where that's from. And I do think it kind of has that quality. And I understand people looking for that sort of humor. I just don't think it comes together clever enough or well enough to really be, you know, one of the movies that I'm like, oh yeah, that's a fucking great Adam McKay movie. Cause I do think because I can watch Anchorman and I can watch Step Brothers. Step Brothers, yeah. I go back to that film is weird. Cause I go back to that one a lot.
You know what I always think about with Step Brothers more so than any of the stuff with the two leads is the scene with, Adam Scott and his family singing in the car and him just being a huge douchebag about it. That's the scene that I always that conjures up into my head, and I just laugh out of nowhere.
Mine is the faux porno that happens at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a lumberjack, and I've come 500 miles to give you my seed. That's what I think of, but, you know.
Okay, so next week, the Netflix homework that I'm going to assign you, a little bit different, Bertolucci's The Conformist.
We got those out of the way. Now we can watch horror movies and thrillers for the rest of the year. Nobody can bitch about it, right?
Right. So there we go. Next week we'll watch Bernardo Bertolucci's The Conformist from 1970, and that'll be in the Netflix homework. And that's going to do us. And if anybody has anything to say about anything we talked about here, if you happen to have different opinions about 10 Cloverfield Lane, 999, or Talladega Nights, or have anything to say about our movie news, or just have anything to say to us personally, You can contact us at jabberandthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at jabberpodcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you're there, please leave us a star rating and a 1 or 2 sentence review. Or, you know, 3 or 4 if you want to write a novella in the comments section of Stitcher and iTunes, you can do so if they'll let you.
Not me. I want that shit concise and poignant and good.
And positive.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Positive. That's a better word.
Not well constructed, necessarily.
Not well constructed, no. It can be poor. Just you have to talk nice about us. Nobody even reads them, really. They just think, you gave this 5-star review. Just do that.
Right. And we're also searchable under the Zune and Windows Podcast Network, as well as Pocket Cast and Player.fm. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly at thesaladforkreviews.blogspot.com. I said the, but don't put the. I'm also have a review, should be coming up here pretty soon, on MacGuffin, MacGuff.in/author/Cassidy. Did a review for a documentary, a rock and roll documentary that just played at South by Southwest.
I like rock and roll. That's cool.
There you go. And check out Richard's blog. He still has it out there. Maybe now that you're done with your book, you can start writing there.
What's fun? No, I won't do that. Writing blog posts is boring. People who like the internet are boring.
rdwally.weebly.com.
Yes. And talking about, what's funny about that is I took off the component that is the blog component.
Oh, okay. Well, there it is.
You can look
at it.
And you can look that I exist, that I'm a real person on the internet.
Somebody who is publishing a lot is my friend Brad Decker, who has his lit blog zine combo extravaganza panel and frame at medium.com/panel-frame. And they're still working on their print zine. I know they have all the submissions for that, and they've already, I think, designed it. They're just looking for the capital to get it to the printers.
Oh, not like the capital, like not like some not kind the capital, of Hunger California, Games kind of no. thing where they have to go in and destroy the evil ruler and just crush the dystopian society.
I mean, maybe a little bit of that too.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead and listen to our other friends out there who do podcasts. Leland over at his Olympia, Washington comedy podcast, dampercast.com. Rod and Denise down here in Southern California at their music podcast, The Listening Party. And go ahead and check out our friend Patrick, who's going to be on our Batman versus Superman episode here pretty soon, over at his 2 podcasts, Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational.
And we will fight with him on that episode like we were a superhero fighting other superheroes. What I'm really saying is we'll be in our underwear all talking about movies in different rooms throughout the country.
Yes. Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.